Welcome to the Shiur Aksava Kabbalah Parshas Toldos. When we started our limud of Aksava Kabbalah, so we did a little bit from the Hakdama, the introduction of the author to Aksava Kabbalah. And there, the author of Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg mentions that one of his motivations in writing the Pirush, writing the commentary, was to explain stories in the Torah Kedosha where the protagonist, the Ovis HaKadoshim, the Shvatim, whatever it happens to be, act in a way which seems very bizarre and may even seem immoral, unethical, you know, difficult to understand. And the author of Aksava Kabbalah writes that part of what he wanted to accomplish in his commentary was to show us how the actions of the Ovis HaKadoshim can be understood and make sense and, are defensible. Notwithstanding the impression we might get at first glance when looking at the pshat, the simple interpretation of the psukim. Certainly there's much in Parshas Toldos which requires explanation along those lines, and specifically the whole episode of Yaakov pretending to be Esav, quote-unquote fooling his father Yitzchak into giving him the brachos, the fact that Rivka is complicit in all of this, again, that... Thank you. Makes you feel a little bit funny about the avos, the imos, and all the actions that they're taking. So certainly there are many interpretations given by the Mefarshim to try to make sense out of the whole story. What we'll try to do tonight is to present some ideas from Aksava Kabbalah, which to some extent build on some of the early interpretations, but also provide some novel and original interpretations to try to understand, you know, what's going on over here, how Rivka and Yaakov can conspire to quote-unquote steal the brachos away from Esav and give them to Yaakov. So I want to start in Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, where Rivka calls on Yaakov and tells him that she's heard Yitzchak telling Esav that he should go out, he should prepare matamim, delicious food, and that will be the vehicle through which Yitzchak will then bless Esav. And as Rivka quotes, Yitzchak is saying to Esav, "Vabarechecha lifnei Hashem lifnei Mosi," that Yitzchak says to Esav, "I will bless you before Hashem, before I pass away." Now the Aksava Kabbalah notes that if you look in Yitzchak's actual words to Esav, he doesn't quite say that. When Yitzchak speaks to Esav in Pasuk Dalet of the same Perek, he says, "Bavur tiborechicha nafshi b'terem amos," in order that my soul should bless you before I die. It's only Rivka, when she recounts what Yitzchak said to Esav, she throws in "Va'avorechecha lifnei Hashem," "I will bless you before Hashem, lifnei Mosi," before I die. What's the significance of those two words "lifnei Hashem," which are not present when Yitzchak speaks to Esav, but which Rivka seems to add when recounting the story to Yaakov? So the Aksava Kabbalah writes that the lashon lifnei Hashem she'amar Rivka ain't the shinui mima she'amar Yitzchak tivarechecha nafshi. Right, the fact that Rivka added the words lifnei Hashem, before Hashem, I will bless you before Hashem, that's not something different. That's really implied in what Yitzchak said in actuality when he said leman tivarechecha nafshi bavur tivarechecha nafshi v'terem amos, that my soul should bless you before I die. What does it mean that my soul should bless you before I die? Demika amar nafshi v'hi teida beruach hakodesh im yaskim hakodesh baruch hu. Right? Because nafshi means that I should bless you in a way which is congruent with what Hashem wants. In other words, bavur tibarechecha nafshi doesn't just mean nafshi is not just another way of saying I myself, you know, but my soul should bless you means my soul, with the agreement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should bless you. And the truth is the two expressions are really the same. When Yitzchak says to Varechecha Nafshi, and when Rivka quotes Yitzchak as saying Varechecha Lifnei Hashem, it's really the same thing. Ki habracha hayotza mipi kedoshei elyon, enenu kefi ha'ola al dato, rak kefi mashe mushpa elov mishamayim. When a holy person like Yitzchak gives the bracha, it's not just, you know, what comes to mind at that particular moment. If Yitzchak really is giving a bracha to his son, that means Yitzchak is channeling that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts into his head and puts into his heart to bestow as a bracha. Because when a tzaddik like Yitzchak is giving a bracha, he is clinging mentally to spiritual concepts and spiritual things, and Avshom Uvshetes Michomer Yuso, his soul divests itself of its physicality, Umiskasheres Be'el Yonim, and it is tied to the upper realms. Ukeilu Omedes Shom Lifnei Hashem, Lahamshich Mituv Hashem Elamuchon Lekabel HaBrachos. And when a true tzaddik like Yitzchak is giving a bracha, it's as if he's standing before Hashem. So, in other words, says the Haksav HaKabbalah, the expression, Bavur Tivarechecha Nafshi, that my soul should bless you, means my soul, when it goes into this kind of spiritual state and connects with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the soul then will be a conduit to bring God's words and God's blessings down to you. And it's as if my soul at that moment will be standing before Hashem. And that's the expression that Rivka then uses. Rivka is really just paraphrasing what Yitzchak himself said. When Rivka says, Ba'avor tivarecha lifnei Hashem, that Yitzchak as if said, I will bless you before Hashem, that's really the same thing as Nafshi. My soul will be as if it's before God and will channel God's words to you. What's the point of all of this? The point of all of this that the Haksav HaKabbalah wants to bring out is that the true bracha is not just what Yitzchak feels like bestowing. In a certain sense, Yitzchak is just a kli. He's just a vessel to channel the bracha from Hashem. It's Hashem's bracha which is devolving upon the recipient of Yitzchak's bracha. And therefore, and again we'll see how this plays out, if Esav is an unworthy recipient, he could never really get the bracha from Yitzchak anyway, because all Yitzchak is doing is channeling God's bracha. Right? If God's bracha is not appropriate for Esav, if God's bracha is only appropriate for somebody like a Yaakov, so, you know, Yitzchak can bless Esav from here till tomorrow, but it's not going to have an effect because he's not really serving as a proper, he's not designated to serve as a conduit, as a bracha for Esav. But let's see where we go with this. So, right back, Sava Kabbalah. Once you understand that Yitzchak is really just a conduit for the bracha, and that his soul is connecting to Hashem and then bringing Hashem's bracha down into this world, now you won't have any complaints anymore against the great Tzadekes Rivka. How is it that Rivka set out to fool Yitzchak and to try to get him to do something other than what he actually wanted to do? Yitzchak wanted to bless Esav, and comes Rivka and she thwarts his plans and gets him to bless Yaakov instead. That doesn't really sound very nice. It doesn't sound very fair. Doesn't sound like a good recipe for Shalom Bayis. You know, you name it, it sounds like a really bad idea. So how could it be that, you know, Rivka would have done something like that? But when we think about it, says Aksava Kabbalah, in point of fact, what she did was very appropriate. Ki acharei sheshama divrei Yitzchak levarach birkas hanefesh shehamechuvon bo lifnei Hashem klomar lefi ritzon Hashem. What did Yitzchak say? Yitzchak didn't just say, "I want to give a bracha to Esav." Yitzchak said, "I want to channel the deserving bracha of Hashem unto Esav. I want to channel Hashem's bracha where my neshama connects to Hashem." And brings down the bracha that Hashem himself wants to bestow upon Esav. I want to give a bracha that's lefi ritzon Hashem, that fits with what God Himself wants. So, at that point, once Rivka heard that, hinehi yada beveir gomor shebirchaso leEsav einenu lefi ritzon Hashem. Rivka realized that, which for whatever reason Yitzchak himself did not realize. Rivka knew that Esav was not really a deserving recipient of Yitzchak's bracha, and therefore, although Yitzchak in his mind thought that he was bringing down Hashem's bracha onto Esav, in point of fact, he was mistaken, and he would not be able to bring down Hashem's bracha on Esav, because Esav was not really deserving of that bracha. Oh, okay, so one second, let's go slow. Rivka had inside information. She was told already that, you know, the younger brother is going to rule over the older brother. So she knew that. She also knew that Esav was a Rasha and was not really deserving of the bracha. So, how then, knowing what she knew, how could she allow Yitzchak to go ahead and give a bracha that would go against God's will, that would not really even be an effective bracha because it was going against God's will? How could she allow Yitzchak to go ahead with something that would be against God's will and would not even be effective? The bracha that Yitzchak would give would be a mistaken bracha, a bracha made in error. Yitzchak didn't know about the nevuah that Rivka had received, that Esav was going to be subservient to Yaakov. He didn't realize that Esav was a Rasha. So everything that he was about to do was based on an error. In a sense, if Rivka would allow Yitzchak to go ahead with giving the bracha, that would be the immoral thing to do, because then Yitzchak would be bestowing a bracha in error. He would be wasting a bracha. In a certain sense, it would be a bracha levatala, a vain bracha, and Rivka would be held accountable because she knew. In other words, Mashal Amad Davidom. You see a guy take a cup, and he's about to make a shahako, and you know there's nothing there. So, again, why the guy doesn't know there's nothing there is a separate issue. But, you know, you realize that there's nothing in the cup. So he's about to make a shahakol, and then he's going to drink, and there's nothing there. So the best thing you can do is to stop him from making the shahakol. Now, all of this is begging a question, which is waiting to be asked. So before every one of us asks the question, let's let the Ksav HaKabbalah ask the question. Okay, so what you'd think Rivka should have done was to go over to Yitzchak and say, "My darling husband, your plan... not a good idea. Really not a good idea. We have this nevuah, and, Esav, you know, this tzaddikal Esav, you know, you think he's, you know, the top guy in Lakewood? Not really. No, not the top guy, not the second guy. Not even the 1,743rd guy. He's really not, you know, not too much to write home about." So why didn't Rivka just do that? Why didn't you just go over to Yitzchak and say, "We have a problem"? So we know there's a famous comment of the Netziv. The Netziv was a slightly younger contemporary of the Ksav HaKabbalah, where the Netziv writes, you know, there was always a certain imbalance in the relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka. Again, he was much older than her. You know, whatever medrash you're going to accept in terms of how old Rivka was when they got married, but Yitzchak was certainly much older than her. And there was always a certain imbalance. Rivka was a little bit in awe of Yitzchak. It wasn't a regular husband-wife relationship, and she was a little afraid to go over to Yitzchak and to tell him the truth. That's the Netziv makes that comment. The Ksav HaKabbalah comes from a different perspective. For the Ratzisa Lahodia Amitas Hadavar LeYitzchak, and Rivka did not want to share the truth with Yitzchak. Why? Livlit sa'er oso ladas ki yesh lo ben hamikukal b'ma'asim. It would be so painful for Yitzchak to realize that Esav was as much a Rasha as he was and not deserving of the bracha. So Rivka felt better to hide the truth from him and to manipulate and do things behind his back rather than tell him straight out.
So why was Yaakov afraid to be Esav?
Oh, okay, so let's go step by step. L'chein sadkar me'od la'asos v'tachbulas mirma. Therefore, she was really right. She was justified to use the trickery that she did. On the one hand, this would preserve Yitzchak from doing something that was clearly wrong, for Yitzchak to bless Esav, which was a major mistake. So she was trying to move things behind the scenes so that Yitzchak should bless Yaakov with the bracha that Yaakov really deserved. You know, the bracha that would indicate that as a tzaddik he was able to go on and do good things. And the truth is, had Yitzchak known all of the information, he would have given the bracha to Yaakov as well. Yitzchak wanted to channel Hashem's bracha on the deserving recipient. The deserving recipient was really Yaakov. So just tell Yitzchak that. That would hurt Yitzchak. Fahadavar dome. So then the Aksav HaKabbal gives the following mashal. Fahadavar dome l'mi shiroa ish iver yotzei lizroa sodeyu. V'holech uba el chelka achas misedosav, asher gafris v'mel strefo chol arsa. Imagine a blind man who owns multiple fields, and the blind man is going out to sow his field. Why the blind man is going out to sow his field and not giving it to somebody else? It's a separate question, but he goes out to sow his field, and because he's blind, he doesn't realize that the field is not really arable, that, you know, you can't really plant anything in the field. V'ho'ish ha'ro'e oso eno rotzalomar b'feirish ta'us hu b'yodcha. There's a bystander, and the bystander doesn't want to go over to the blind person and say, you know, you're making a mistake, you're trying to sow a field which is not going to grow anything. Because that will hurt the blind person. It will put in his face, so to speak, the fact that he can't see. Lochein b'tachbulas mirmo ya'aseh ad shlo yargish ki ish acher yimna'eyu milahafitz zir'ono v'alachelak ashelo sizro v'lo sitzmach v'lo satzmiach ki ates yodo l'shlach osam achelak sadeyu aroi l'sriya. So what does the bystander do? Because of his compassion on the blind man, he just takes the blind man, he walks with him, and he manages to just maneuver him so that the blind man is going to drop the seeds in a different field, a field which is arable, a field in which things can grow. That way, the blind person won't be the wiser, and, you know, what's supposed to happen will happen. That's what's happening over here. Certainly any intelligent person, says Aksava Kabbalah, would praise this bystander who in a sensitive way redirects the blind person, who sets himself up in a backhanded way to serve as the eyes of the blind person, to just steer him in the right direction in a way which is sensitive.
Doesn't this beg the question, though, if we're going to defend the Avos, why was Yitzchak so figuratively blind, both in terms of who Esav was, but also who Yaakov was? He doesn't seem to be in touch with both of his sons.
Right. So this is another issue which the Ksav HaKabbalah doesn't deal with, but other Mefarshim deal with. But I think, you know, what other Mefarshim say certainly is relevant to Ksav HaKabbalah. You know, when we learn about Esav and Yaakov in school, you know, in elementary school, so, you know, Yaakov is this tzaddik, this masmid, you know, he's sitting and he's learning all the time, and Esav is a monster, right? So I think it's pretty clear that, you know, that's exaggerated and that's not a realistic portrayal of, you know, what was going on. Esav was not a monster at all. Esav was somebody who clearly was so sophisticated in his, you know, in his outward appearance that he was able to hoodwink Yitzchak, right? Now, some of Farshim will say that Yitzchak, really had it right. He just had a sense of a different role for Esav. Saba Kabbalah, I think, assumes, like the simple pshat, that, you know, Esav managed to trick Yitzchak. Again, Chazal say he went to Yitzchak and, you know, he asked him all kinds of questions that made him think he was a great person. And again, he was the firstborn. So if you're Yitzchak, and you don't have the benefit of having read the Chumash, so you don't know, you know, what the reality is, and, you know, your firstborn son, as far as you can tell, is this pious, you know, upstanding individual who you think is going to carry your legacy forward, when again, not the monster that he's portrayed in elementary school, but somebody who is of a tremendous, tremendous madrega. So, you know, you could see why somebody like a Yitzchak could be fooled by that. In other words, it's not the first time, it won't be the last time in life that even great people can have mistaken understandings of people.
But if you're going to be a conduit for God's brachos, shouldn't you be on the level that you know where it should be directed?
Right, so apparently A, not necessarily, and B, you know, you see that Esav really did a good job. In other words, again, we look at Esav in hindsight, you know, because we know the story in the Chumash. But, you know, you have to imagine that Esav, for all intents and purposes, looked, you know, looked the parts, walked like a duck, talked like a duck. In other words, he you know, as far as anyone could tell, he was a tzaddik who looked like he was going to be the heir to the, you know, to the throne.
The mother realized who he was and found that there was something wrong with the parents in this case.
Right, so that goes back to the Nitziv's comment, which, again, on a contemporary level, I think we relate to the Nitziv's comment. There's something strange about the marriage if they go through years and years and years, and Rivka has a certain perspective on her son, and Yitzchak just, she doesn't want to share it with Yitzchak for whatever reason. We would say there's something not quite right about that marriage. It's interesting that Aksava Kabbalah is coming from a very different perspective, and I think that Aksava Kabbalah's idea is very relevant to the following contemporary moral dilemma which people struggle with. Rahman al-Islam, you have a family member who has a terrible, terrible disease, a fatal disease. What's the more compassionate thing to do? To share with them that they have this fatal disease, to be upfront with them, or to play along and keep them in the dark, you know, so that knowledge doesn't pain them? So that's that. First of all, it's a halachic question, right? But it's a real question that a lot of people struggle with today, or, you know, even something not that extreme. Is it better sometimes to share the truth if it's going to be painful, or is it better sometimes to obscure the truth, you know, when you think it's not going to be as painful? Aksava Kabbalah is basically saying that for Yitzchak it would have been so painful to imagine that Esav was not the tzaddik that he thought he was, that, you know, Rivka thought the better thing to do would be to keep Yitzchak in the dark, let him think that Esav is a tzaddik, as long as no actual harm comes from that, as long as the bracha itself can be redirected, so, you know, so everything's going to work out well in the end. What I'm about to say, the Aksava Kabbalah doesn't say, but I think it's the natural follow-up to the Aksava Kabbalah, perhaps the lesson of the story, according to the Aksava Kabbalah, is that that cheshbon of Rivka, that calculation of Rivka, was not such a good idea, right? In other words, sometimes it's usually better to tell the truth, even if the truth hurts, rather than try to keep everybody's feelings intact and manipulate things so that, you know, people are none the wiser, but, you know, you hope things are going to work out well. You asked before, you know, why did Yaakov say to his mother, you know, who says that this is going to work out, right? Why was Yaakov not willing to go along with it if it was such a good idea, if Rivka was such a... So it would seem that Yaakov probably said as follows, look, if I'm discovered, so one of two things is going to happen. Either Yitzchak's not going to realize that Esav is really a Rasha, and then, you know, what did we, and he's just not going to give me the bracha, and then what did we accomplish? He's just going to go ahead and give a bracha to Esav anyway. Or he will realize that it's me, and that Esav is the Rasha, And then your attempt to make, you know, Yitzchak feel good and not hurt his feelings in any way is not going to come to fruition either. So there are a lot of potential downsides, Yaakov says to his mother, in terms of all of this.
Or see that it'll work out, Yitzchak will be deceived, but Esau will be really upset.
Right, which is what happened. Right. Now, what happens in the end of the day? Yitzchak realizes that it was actually Yaakov instead of Esau, as we know. And his reaction is Gam Baruch Yehiyah. I want the bracha to come about anyway, because there's something that Yitzchak realizes in that moment of nevuah that convinces him that he gave the bracha to the right person. Right. So in retrospect, he realizes all of this comes together. It must be Yaakov was the right recipient of the bracha. Esav was really the wrong recipient of the bracha. Okay, now I have to rethink, you know, years and years of years and how I dealt with my respective sons. But we don't see Yitzchak fall to pieces and say, you know, how could it be that, you know, I had misplaced trust in Esav all of these years? Yitzchak is able to deal with it. So according to the Aksava Kabbalah, I think it's not wrong to say Taksava Kabbalah is explaining the Cheshbon of Rivka as to why she thought that she was doing something right. But in the end of the day, the Chumash is telling us that although she was well intentioned, in other words, it's not, you know, she wanted to do the right thing while sparing Yitzchak's feelings. The takeaway that we're supposed to take away from all of this is that in the end of the day, that was not it was not a wise calculation. It might have not been an immoral calculation. It might have been an ethical calculation in many ways. It's not that she acted immorally or unethically, but it maybe wasn't the smartest choice. Maybe the smartest choice would have been just to tell Yitzchak, you know, straight up. And we see Yitzchak can deal with it. You know, Yitzchak is able to deal with the fact that Esav is not the tzaddik that he thought Esav was.
Yeah. Do we say that this bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov was God's bracha?
Yeah.
Or was it Yitzchak's bracha?
No, so that's exactly the point that the Ksav HaKabbalah is making. This was God's bracha. So fundamentally speaking, God's bracha is not going to attach itself to a rasha. You know, Yitzchak is just a conduit. And then therefore, that's why it was especially important to kind of maneuver things so that the right person would be there when Yitzchak brought, you know, the bracha from Hashem through him, you know, onto the proper recipient.
We're saying that Yitzchak's bracha would not have done anything if he was a rasha. Does that mean that Kohen was giving a bracha to the Sibur, you know, it's the Sibur of Hashem, he shouldn't give that bracha because it's Finuot?
I think the different types of brachas, right?
In other words,
right. So, but this bracha is really, let me just mention something briefly. Again, there's so much in the Aksava Kabbalah this week that I will have to like summarize a lot outside without being able to read inside. The Aksava Kabbalah makes an interesting point. What was the bracha that Yitzchak was intending to give? If you read the psukim, V'yiten l'cho Elokim itala shamayim ishmanei ha'oretz, it's a very physical kind of bracha. God should give you dew. God should give you the fat of the earth. The Aksava Kabbalah suggests that the real bracha was the bracha of spiritual leadership. And that bracha, by the way, you know, it's one thing to tell the tzibur at large, Yivarecha Hashem Yishmerecha, you should have Ashirus, you should have Shmira, all these things. But to give the bracha of spiritual leadership, the recipient has to be a tzaddik. So the bracha that he really gave was this bracha of spiritual leadership. If you look in the psukim, right before it says, V'yitan l'cho Elokim itala Hashemayim Yishmanei Ha'aretz, the pasuk says, Vayivarcheyu, he blessed him. Says the Aksava Kabbalah, he blessed him with the blessing of spiritual leadership. But since the spiritual leader needs to have the physical wherewithal to be able to exercise that spiritual leadership, V'yitan l'cho Elokim itala Hashemayim Yishmanei Ha'aretz. In other words, the bracha of physical prosperity was the footnote to the real bracha. Right? When we were in school, we all learned V'yitan l'cho Elokim. That's the bracha that he gave Yaakov. The Ksav HaKabbalah says no. That was the footnote to the bracha that he gave Yaakov. The bracha was the bracha of spiritual leadership, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you, you know, physical things in this world to enable you, you know, to lead Klal Yisrael as the spiritual leader. But that's why the bracha you know, could not apply to a Rasha. He wasn't fit for that bracha spiritual leadership. When at the end of the day, Esav comes and says, you have anything left? So Yitzchak says, look, I gave your brother spiritual leadership. I gave him, you know, a lot of physical blessing as well. I can give you a little bit of physical blessing also, yeah, a consolation prize, right? But the real bracha of the spiritual leadership was given to Yaakov because he's the one who deserved it. That's Hashem. After Ma'ariv, we'll pick up with part two, continuing about these discussions with the brachas. Welcome to the second half of the shiur, Ksava Kabbalah Parshas Toldos. The first half tonight, we spoke about the Haksava Kabbalah's defense of Rivka and Yaakov, quote unquote, tricking Yitzchak. Again, his understanding is that Rivka especially realized that Esav, of course, was an inappropriate recipient of the bracha. The bracha really needs to go to Yaakov. And rather than pain Yaakov by sharing the truth with him about the quality or lack of quality of his son, she thought the better thing to do would be to obscure the truth from Yitzchak, to have him give the bracha to the right person anyway, unbeknownst to him, and this way everything will end up well. The right person will get the bracha. Yitzchak isn't going to be disillusioned about the you know, what he thinks is the tzidkus, the righteousness of Esav, and everything's going to work out okay. Of course, in the midst of everything, Yitzchak does figure out what's going on, and nonetheless, you know, says Gam Baruchi, you know, that I recognize that I made the right decision. I gave the bracha to the right person, and it all works out well from that perspective. There's a very fascinating idea that the Aksava Kabbalah has with regard to one of the famous statements of Yaakov, and how Yaakov, who's identified as the Ish Emes, says something which on the surface is a lie. So Yaakov comes before his father dressed in the begadim, the clothes of Esav, and Yitzchak asks him, who are you? And he says, Anochi Esav v'charecha, I am Esav, your firstborn. So again, we know Rashi famously says, you're supposed to put a comma in there, Anochi, it's me, Yaakov, and by the way, Esav v'charecha, right? But first of all, that's not the simple interpretation of the pasuk, and in all likelihood, that's not what Yitzchak understood when Yaakov was speaking to him. So it still begs the question: how could Yaakov lie, you know, seemingly lie in that particular way? Right.
May I?
Yeah.
Because when Yitzhak asked, how come he came so fast?
Right.
And he says that, well, Hashem, or your God, help me make it faster. You realize that stuff doesn't usually talk like
that. Right. So that's Rashi's interpretation, right? Right. Yeah. Yeah, okay, so you can go with that Rashi's interpretation, you know, that he was his suspicions were aroused by you know, the way in which this person was talking. The Ksava Kabbalah introduces a few ideas to try to give some new light as to how Anochi Esav v'charecha, what it really means, what Yaakov was trying to say. So first of all, he spends some time speaking about the difference between Anochi versus Ani. They both mean I, right? So why is it sometimes the Chumash uses Ani, sometimes it uses Anochi? So the Ksav HaKabbalah here and elsewhere says the following yesod. Whenever the stress in the pasuk is placed on the word I, the term used is Anochi. Whenever the stress in the pasuk is placed elsewhere, and just you're identifying who's speaking, the term is Ani. Right? So in other words, in English, we would italicize the word which is being stressed. So if you're italicizing I, right? So, you know, you would use the word Anochi in Hebrew. There are no italics in Hebrew. Right? So you would use the word Anochi to indicate that word is being stressed. In contrast, if you're just stressing something else in the pasuk, and you just want to say I, because you want to say I as part of the pasuk, so you say ani. So in other words, anochi esav b'charecha would be translated as follows: I am Esav, your firstborn. Now, that's not usually how we understand that pasuk. Now, usually, we would understand that pasuk as saying, I am Esav, your firstborn. The stress is, you know, who this person is. You know, who are you? I am Esav, your firstborn. But says Aksav HaKabbalah, that should have been then, Ani Esav B'Chorecha. Onochi Esav B'Chorecha means, it is I, Esav, your firstborn. I am Esav, your firstborn. What's the difference? So here, the Haksav HaKabbalah adds another thought, where right after saying Anochi Esav b'charecha, Yaakov goes on to say Osisi kaasher dibarta Eloi. I have done everything that you told me to do. Right? So, what exactly is the significance of that statement? Osisi kasher dibarto Eli. I carried out, I did all the things that you told me to do. Says Aksava Kabbalah, Osisi is a play on words of the word Esav itself. What does Esav mean? Esav is related to the word Osa. So the reason Esav is called Esav is because he came out of the womb fully formed. He was Osui. He was fully formed. He was, he had an adult type of body even when he was a child. He had, this tremendous amount of hair that covered his body. Again, something unusual for a child. But in a broader sense, any time someone has fulfilled a mission, the term Esav would be relevant to that person. So when Yaakov says, Osisi kasher dibarto Eli, I have performed that which you asked me to do, in a sense, Yaakov is telling his father as follows: it would not be inappropriate to call me Esav, because Osisi kasher dibarto Eli, I carried out the mission that you put in front of me. So here, says Aksav HaKabbalah, this is how to read the words that Yaakov says to his father. Anochi Esav b'chorecha. It's really I who can be called Esav, your firstborn, because Osisi kasher dibarto Eli, because I carried out the words that you told me to do. In other words, you may not have named me Esav, but the term Esav, the one who does what he's supposed to do, is not inappropriate when it comes to this issue, right? He doesn't just say Hevesi Matamim. He doesn't just say I brought the food. Osisi kasher dibarto Eli, because I carried out what you asked me to do. Therefore, Anochi Esav b'chorecha. I can properly be called Esav. Now again, this is not presumably what Yitzchak understood when Yaakov said all of this, but nonetheless, Yaakov, in all of his, even though Yaakov understands that the right, the moral, the ethical thing to do is to trick Yitzchak under these circumstances because it's sparing Yitzchak's feelings, nonetheless he's taking pains to try to avoid having a falsehood, a sheker, come out of his mouth.
Right.
Right, right. The irony is, according to Aksav HaKabbalah, the true Esav is really Yaakov, right? And that's exactly what he's saying. Anochi Esav b'chorecha. You think Esav is Esav? I'm really the Esav. I'm the one who gets the job done. I'm the one who's really carrying out your words. And on a deeper level, it's not just that, hey, I decided to give myself a new name. I decided to be Esav. On a deeper level, what he's really telling his father is as follows: you think Esav is Esav. You think he's the one who's carrying out your wishes. You think he's the one who's going to carry forward the legacy. The truth is, you're sadly mistaken. It's really I. I am the one, whoever this I is, I'm the one who's going to carry forward this legacy and these things that you want me to carry forward. I'm the one who's the true Esav, in a certain sense of the term.
What are we supposed to learn now from this episode?
Right, so again, I think, as we said initially, the Torah is telling us, according to the Aksava Kabbalah, Rivka was well-intentioned, right? And she wanted to spare Yitzchak's feelings. In the end of the day, it probably would have been better to tell Yitzchak. You know, she miscalculated. But again, it's not an immoral miscalculation. It's a miscalculation which a good ethical, moral person would make. From his description of Yaakov, I think what we take away is sometimes you have to do things that go against your nature. It's the right thing to do for now, right? Again, assuming Yaakov agreed with Rivka that, you know, he didn't want to hurt Yitzchak's feelings, and yet it was important to redirect the bracha, this was the right choice. But even granted that it's the right choice, you have to try not to lie, you know, even when you're doing something which, again, in a different circumstance would be considered to be, you know, dishonest, right? He's acting in a way which is appropriately, you know, manipulative, but even then you don't lie, you know, as much as you can avoid doing so. In other words, even when circumstances demand that you act in a way which is not the normal way of acting, you try to minimize it as much as possible. I think that's... What's that? Now, the truth is sometimes that we might be right. In other words, you know, again, to take an extreme example, you know, Jews need to be smuggled out of Nazi Germany. So, you know, they want a fake passport so they can pass themselves off as, you know, as non-Jews or as citizens of some other country so they can get out of Nazi Germany. Would we think for a moment that, you know, it's immoral to forge the passports? Then would we say that, you know, of course, under the circumstances, this is the right thing to do? Right, right, okay, so... So I think the answer would be, so this is to save Klal Yisrael. In other words, for Klal Yisrael to have the bracha go to Esav, that would be a terrible thing, right? No, I don't know if that's such a stretch. It's not, you know, it's the same kind of thing. This situation demands a different type of approach than a standard situation. As long as you realize it's an atypical situation, yeah.
And there were people in America who were against that.
So apparently not. Apparently Rivka thought that it would hurt Yitzchak. Now again, for us that's strange. You know, have a frank and open conversation, but again she felt it would hurt Yitzchak and she bottled up her true feelings, to, you know, out of a concern that it would hurt Yitzchak in some way.
When they were younger, it's definitely the young kids.
Yeah. Again, I mean, it sounds like the way he's saying that Rivka was afraid of saying something that would hurt Yitzchak. Remember, there was a big disparity in age between them. Right, Yitzchak was 60 when Yaakov and Esav were born. He was not, you know, not a young man at that point anymore. And Rivka, who was much younger, really felt that being honest with him would hurt him. You know, so she preferred to keep up this charade, you know, for many, many years, until it came to a point where, wait a minute, you know, if I keep up the charade at this point, there are going to be terrible consequences for Klal Yisrael. What's that? Maybe. Yeah, maybe. I mean, again, you know, there are a lot of things we can look in retrospect and say, you know, maybe there would have been better ways to handle this. But again, you know, it's always easier in hindsight. Right. B'neinu zeh eno shomea b'koleinu. They have to have the same kol. But the Gemara says that they have to speak in the same voice. You know, homiletically, that means that if they're not on the same page, you know, so you can't really blame them for having the Ben Sora Amara. Okay, we'll pick up next week, Be'ezus Hashem, and we'll see everybody then. Wishing everyone a good Shabbos. Rabbi.